we're ridiculous. The police will come here eventually. Your way, as I told you, attracts attention, but you never listen, do you? Oh no, you never listen.
But my way is working. I can now harness powers the most men can only dream.
You're gonna have to excuse us. Atlas is closed for the moment, but we'll be open again very soon. Thank you for your interest.
With me is John Guiler and Tim Follin, who are involved with the Contradiction video game, which isn't exactly the right term for it, is it? Tim, what is it?
Well, it is a video game, really. I mean, there's no other way of describing it, really. It's definitely a game. It just uses all video, basically. So there are on-screen graphics, but they're just buttons and things to press and that kind of thing. The rest of it, all the, you know, sort of content is video, basically. So it's just a very long video stream spliced into lots of tiny little bits, basically. And, it, you know, the game chooses which bit it's going to play you back at any one point.
Okay. So where did the idea come from?
It was an idea we had originally. It was an audio game. That was original sort of incarnation of it, which was, I used to work for a software company back in, many years, actually, from when I was about 17. I'm waffling now. That was a proper waffle, wasn't it? Basically, when I got to a company called Malibu Interactive, which were obviously an American company who set up in the UK for a while. We worked for them. And at the tail end of that, when they actually went bust in the end, nothing to do with us, hasten to add, I don't think. When they went bust, we kind of were sort of floundering, you know, wondering what to do next. And one of the things, we had a couple of game ideas floating around at that time. And we pitched one of them to the BBC, which was this audio adventure game sort of thing, which at the time was all you could do with the technology. And it wasn't really that. We knew at the time that the ideal format would be a phone that could run this sort of thing. And obviously we hadn't, you know, the iPhone hadn't been invented at that point. So that wasn't, you know, on the cards. But we developed into a video thing, you know, to be played on desktop. And again, the technology wasn't really there. So we kind of left it for quite a long time. I completely forgot all about it, basically. We did do a lot of work on it originally, and then I forgot about it. Then with the advent of the iPad, it just looked like, oh, right, there's the opportunity. There's something that would be ideal for this. And so from there, I kind of had a go at writing it just as a hobby, really, for probably took me a year probably to get it together, to get a script together. And then from that, I approached John to say, look, you know, why don't we make a trailer for this, which we shot. It was kind of a while ago now, wasn't it, John? It was in...
Well, it was well over a year ago. Yeah, something like that. It was a year ago.
It was about a year ago, wasn't it? Yeah, something like that. I bought you a breakfast, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Yes, thank you.
And we did this little trailer for it. We really... with the idea of going on to Kickstarter with it. So we put it onto Kickstarter with that trailer. We got quite a bit of interest, but nowhere near what we were asking, because I think I asked for about 10K originally.
You did, yes.
Yes, and because at the time I thought, well, you know, you need to be able to pay people a decent amount of money for this. When that fell through, initially I thought, well, that's it, you know, I won't bother. And it's probably you, wasn't it, John, saying, go on, try it again. I don't know who it's
really. Well, I can't remember exactly. But, yeah, I mean, it was just something that I knew that you couldn't drop, really, because everyone I mentioned the idea to was jumping up and down with excitement and wanted to see it immediately. So I thought, well, yeah, we've got to, you know, it has to be made somehow.
That was it. But it was always the money was the issue, wasn't it? And
still is.
It still very much is. Well, I mean, the way Kickstarter works is I put it on for 3,000. I thought, well, I'll be very modest. What I did was I thought, well, I can't afford to pay a decent fees for that, but what I can do is offer a bit of a cut of the profits sort of thing of the game. to, you know, people that would be involved, just as a sort of incentive, really, to come and do it. We got 4,000 in the end, I think, from the Kickstarter, technically, but obviously Kickstarter take quite a big chunk of that, so I ended up with about 3,400, I think, out of that 4,000. That's how much you actually get from Kickstarter. So so we got through that very speedily, didn't we?
Oh, yes. First just, 2 days.
Yeah, basically, that went very quickly. And I'm now about, I think it's cost of around... This is purely outgoing cost. This is not obviously including time that, you know, we spent on it sort of thing. Mm. I've spent on it. But it's probably around the 5K mark now, right, if not a bit more than that. So that's money that's come out of my savings to pay for it.
We need another 5K for the TV ad campaign. So if anyone yes. else would like to give us $5,000 for that TV ad campaign, then do.
Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah. I thought I'd yeah. ask. Yeah.
Was there any... first of all, this idea of an audio game, has anyone else done that?
Not the, I think, no, there is something. There is, now, what was it called? It was, there is something that is kind of similar. It's right. a horror game. If the name comes to me, I'll tell you what it is. I did find it. There's only one, though, as far as I can find.
I've never heard of an audio game before.
No.
It seems so obvious as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It was kind of, obviously, it's difficult to make it work. But a friend of mine is actually developing one right now, because I'm doing the music for that as well.
Right.
And he came to me, he kind of approached me, when was it? Probably 6 months ago or something, and said, if not more. And he didn't know about Contradiction at that point. And he kind of said, I'm thinking about doing this audio adventure game. And he knew that we'd tried it in the past. And I said, well, actually, I'm doing one as well. So we're kind of helping each other out. I think he's the programmer that was working on his game might be helping out with me, hopefully. Right. Sure. I've not asked him yet, but he's offered his help. So
okay. So when you decided that the iPad would be a good platform, did you do any research? Did you look for any other games that might be along the same lines?
Yeah. I mean, there isn't really anything out there. Part of the reason is the file size is because it would be a big app compared to, it's not a 50 meg app, but having said that, I'm probably going to sort of make it available in different resolutions, different, sizes for the same price sort of thing.
Right.
According to how much memory you've got. I think the smallest I'm going to be able to get it down to is probably a little over 500 meg.
No, that's not too bad.
Which is not bad, really, is it? And so what I'm thinking is offering like an HD version as well, which would be, it doesn't cost any more to make it. It's just a different, video file, basically, which is HD. So, but that would take probably, that would be over a gig, that would be probably a gig and a half or something like that, So that would be a big app, But it's, I mean, the whole thing's edited now, and it's coming in at 2 hours, 45 minutes, basically, worth of footage.
Wow.
So it's quite long. There is quite a lot of it. And that's spliced into tiny little pieces, that you're seeing sort of thing as it puts it together. There's quite a lot there, basically, and there's probably going to be more as well, isn't there, John? we filmed this extra bit.
Yeah, we need some. Yeah, we need an ending.
I'm quite mindful at this point about the memory, the size that this is going to take. So I don't want to add too much, purely because if it does start nudging a gig, even for the low res version, I think it's going to start putting people off. But we'll see. We'll see.
Okay. So John's in it. Are you in it, Tim?
I'm not in it, no.
You're not in it, no. John's in it. Who else is in it?
well, I'm in it, and other people are in it. Magnus Sinding is in it, and Paul Darrow is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie Gray is in it. Anna Rosa... How do you pronounce Anna Rosa's surname, Tim?
Pronounce it Butler.
Oh, you missed the D as Aguirre. As Aguirre.
Yeah,
she's going to take me to task on this when she hears this. She'll say, "You didn't even know how to pronounce my name." And so she's going to—that's not her accent, actually. It's a different part of Ireland.
Uncanny, John. That was.
She really is going to kick the crap out of me now. So she's in it. Anna Rosa Butler. We'll miss out the middle bit, but she's half Spanish, half. What else is she? Half Irish.
She's half. She's. Half I think everything. She's all Irish. I think it's all a lie.
Do you think?
What's the size of the cast? How many players are there?
There are six main parts, with not including Rupert Booth, who plays Jenks, the inspector.
Yeah, I missed the all-important lead character, didn't
you? Yes, I did, yeah. including Rupert, there are seven main parts.
Right.
And we have a few walk-ons, that we have Chris Jackson walking on, as doing a bit part.
That's right.
One of the most notable walk-ons is Ellie...
Ellen Chivers.
How do you say it? Chivers. Chivers.
Chivers.
Chivers. Chivers. Right.
Ellen Chivers is a friend of mine from a long way back. We were in our first professional show together at the West Yorkshire Playhouse, so there you go. But she's not a walk-on. She's Lisa Blint. She's a main character.
She's not someone you can interview, sort of thing. Most of these characters,
I see.
The main characters you can interview, sort of thing. But
then, but she does give a notable performance. Oh. I wouldn't call her a walk-on. She'll. I think we're going to be beaten up by all the cast members after this interview.
I don't mean walk-on. Literally walk-on. I mean she's.
No, she's already there. She doesn't walk on. She's there.
She's very. She has a very, very important standout scene, doesn't she?
Actually? She does. Yes, she does.
That she was brilliant at, and she was the first. I think we recorded her scene first, didn't we?
Yeah, it was the first thing we ever shot. Yeah,
yeah, and it was the first thing where I kind of thought, oh, right, so we're at that level now. And she sort of set the bar for the rest of the thing, really, didn't she? But
she did. She's a very good actress, much better than I expect. I mean, she's been training for the last 4 years since I've seen her. So yeah, she blew my socks off as well. Really good, really good. Absolutely. Right. We're very happy with all the performances in.
Yeah.
In Contradiction, all of them. There's some exciting stuff to come. You'll like it.
Okay. As walk-ons, I should mention Dan, shouldn't I? Because he and Sally, yeah. Because he was actually. I mean, Sally's actually my niece, and that was her boyfriend Dan, who walked in. And to be honest, he was great, wasn't he? In the end,
stunning. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't think had he ever acted before.
No,
he's a singer, isn't he? A musician.
He sings, he's a teacher, he's a full-time teacher, but he has lots of,
Fingers in pies,
that's the one.
Yeah, okay,
yeah.
So, this isn't the first time this type of game has been done. There was a dark and distant, eerie, murky world in the past, in the 80s and 90s in particular. Oh, here we go.
She's woken up.
Do you need to go?
I'll just prompt you, and then if you start talking, I'll just mute myself.
Yes.
So, you know, there were Laserdisc interactive games in the past, wasn't there? So I'm assuming you were aware of these, and how do you think Contradiction is going to be a step up?
Okay, one of the things with the Laserdisc games was the seek time, I think, and that kind of thing. What I remember is Dragon's Lair, and the kind of press a button, nothing happens until something, you know, you wait for the thing to load, sort of thing, and then you see a little bit of video, and it kicks it. And also the system of the way those games work was a branching system, and I think most people I talk to about this presume that that's what I've got, a branching system, which is you take your option, and, you know, you get a few options, and you go forward. And then you get some more options, and then eventually you get to a dead end, and you have to go back to some other point where you can choose options again. And that's specifically what I was trying to avoid for this, which is where the whole Contradiction concept came from in the first place, really. It was a way to avoid, avoid that branching system. So what I thought was, how can I kind of create some sort of playability, some sort of game with that concept of the pre-recorded video, and what I ended up with was this idea that people tell you things and they give you information and that's noted down, and then in amongst what they've told you, which is usually, you know, one reply to a piece of evidence that you can collect, might contain sort of three or four points, and one of those points will contradict one of the other points that they've said to something else. So basically what you're trying to find is you're trying to see where they're lying by doing that. Yeah. When do you pair two pieces of contradictory statements from them, basically you then get what's a contradiction sequence where they admit basically they were lying, and they explain why they were lying. And that gives you more information. And so it's all about, you know, a collecting piece of information which other characters respond to. So when they give you a new piece of information, you can then go and ask all the other characters about that piece of information and see what they know. You also collect evidence on your travel sort of thing. Yeah, there's a basic kind of interactivity to the way you move around the village. So as you're moving around the village, things are changing all the time. You're getting new pieces of information, you're seeing new scenes, meeting new people as that progresses. Technically the way that's broken up is that as you get through the contradictions, you'll get through so many contradictions and then a new chapter will tick over and you'll see the church clock. I'll just say that again. You see the church clock.
No, leave it as it was.
Stick with that.
Stick with that, yeah.
You see the church clock.
Cock.
See the church clock, cock.
Yes.
That's the Yorkshire version of contradiction. Look at the church clock, cock. It's just struck.
It's struck. It's ringing. Right then.
Back on track.
So anyway, you see the church clock and the time will progress. Now, the story is set over one Friday night. Basically, you get there, Jenks gets there at 5:30. Now, the reason why it's 5:30 is because there are so many chapters. In the end, I broke it up.
It's a very funny time, 5:30, isn't it, Tim?
It's just an odd time.
I just love the way you said 5:30.
I'm embarrassed by 5:30. Something embarrassing about 5:30. I don't know about you, but anyway. The reason for that is because the first chapter is very brief and there's only one contradiction. It was kind of a setup chapter, you know, it's to get you into the mood sort of chapter. So that only lasts half an hour. It doesn't actually last half an hour. It lasts as long as it takes you to do it. It could be 5 minutes. It could be an hour, you know. But once you've got to that stage, you've got the first contradiction, you then get 6 o'clock. And then from then on, you get sort of, it takes a number of contradictions from a number of people to get to the next chapter. This every chapter, basically, the environment will subtly change a little bit. You'll suddenly start meeting people in a location you've been to before, or, you know, an object will appear somewhere that you hadn't been previously, sort of thing. Mm. The idea is that that's the progression of time through the game. Originally, I mean, again, if I had the memory to do this, I have a difference. It looked quite nice because I was able to do kind of the sky getting darker as you progress through the game, sort of thing. As it is at the moment, I think I might have to stick with it just being the same sort of, you know, dusky sort of nighttime look throughout the whole thing, just purely because of memory and the memory problem. You know, if I had, you know, memory wasn't a problem, you could have it kind of, you know, the sky get darker as you went through, sort of thing, which I might do a version like that if I can get around to it, you know, but anyway, that's how the game progresses. And then when you get to the end of the game, you have, you know, a set of contradictions at the end, a few replies prompt characters to go off and have arguments and things, and which you kind of witness if you're in the right place. And then that's the end of the game, basically. So it's just, you know, a series of contradictions that you have to get through.
I was wondering how it was all put to, or how it will be put together, how and planning comes into this as well. Because forgive me if you mentioned this while I was away as well. I'm thinking of a big, there must have been some sort of wireframe diagram, and then lots of scripts, or pages of scripts for each one.
Yeah.
So there must have been problems in, it must have been difficult to develop that, because I've written a couple of kind of, you know, choose your own adventure game style little stories in the past, and I worked on a Doctor Who app last year, which eventually didn't get anywhere along the same lines.
Right.
And it's a bit of a headache, but you're doing that for two and a half hours, I think you said, and filming it as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of challenges there, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the only way I've been able to do this is just by concentrating on one thing at a time, you know, and that's had its drawbacks in a way, because, as I say, the first thing I did was write the script, and the story I've ended up with wasn't my favourite story, really. I mean, I had a few going at the time. One of them was very much Wicker Man sort of territory, which I much preferred. But the problem with it was purely, when you come to actually write this thing, because it's all based on the idea that people are lying. So you've got to kind of have a network of lies that people have told that kind of make sense, you know?
Yeah.
And that was the hardest bit by far, really, to, you know, from the writing point of view. I managed to just work out a system, a way of working backwards, you know, to try and create a story. And I think the one I ended up with, this Atlas concept, was really because it was the only one that seemed to throw up enough layers basically in the mix. You know, it seemed to have enough in it to maintain enough, you know, reasons for people to lie through the whole story sort of thing. And that was hard basically making that work. But in terms of writing the scripts, I mean, I think John, you know, obviously, you know, this from the script point of view, I wrote the actual dialogue very quickly, really. And I think it shows, to be honest, because really it's originally, I just had a huge kind of, a long document that each scene would just describe what happened in that scene and what people said, you know, so it would be basically an outline of this person says this and it's because they think this, and, you know, there was no actual dialogue there. And I did think originally, because I saw this mountain of script that I'd have to write sort of thing, and originally I thought maybe I should just get actors who can just improvise, and I'll just say, this is what you have to say in this script, you know, improvise sort of thing. And I think just because I kind of thought, having worked with actors a few times in very rushed situations, you just can't do that. You know, you just don't have the time, don't have the luxury of time to do it, really.
Right.
So I had to script something. And so, you know, I mean, in an ideal world, I would have worked on the script with someone and, you know, got it honed it and all the rest of it. And, you know, if we get a chance again to do this over again, that's definitely what I'll be doing next time, you know.
but I mean, it was developed with a short amount of time to rehearse. So it wasn't just, you know, straight in. So, we did embellish what was written down. So I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's a problem. I don't think the dialogue's a problem at all. I don't want to give that impression that, you know.
It's not a problem.
Not
a problem. I think at worst, it's functional. You know what I mean? That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It has to be for, you know, to make the game work, literally.
Yeah.
So, it's, I know that's been a concern of yours in the past, but everything I've seen doesn't present itself as a concern to the layman. Is what
no,
I'm saying.
There's certainly no woodenness, is there, at all? I mean,
absolutely not. Not especially not with me.
Well, you accept it. I think. No, I think the thing is, you know, the quality of people that, I mean, I have to say, John,
especially me.
Yeah, but you found most of these. You knew most of these actors, didn't you?
Well, I knew all of them apart from Paul.
So how did you get Paul Darrow involved?
Well, it was one of those things that it was a Sunday morning. I was sitting in bed feeling sorry for myself and, you know, pissed off, you know, that I'd drunk so much the night before, and realizing that I had to find somebody very, very, well, I say very famous, but well known enough to carry, because basically we needed a guest star. That was an absolute necessity to have somebody. We needed somebody there as a draw, somebody as a pull. So I knew we had to get somebody fairly well known. It couldn't, you know, just be some guy who's been on Emmerdale for a week. You know, it had to be somebody who people liked and knew, and who was a good actor. And so, yeah, so I was just looking through Spotlight and Casting Call Pro, just sat there in bed, miserable, you know, Sunday morning, misery, hungover. We've got a film on Monday and Tuesday. What am I going to do? And my partner just simply said to me, well, who would you like to play? You know, basically in an ideal world, who would you like to play it? So I just typed in Paul Darrow's name and pressed an image search. And I said, hey, name, you know. And she just sort of said, well, ask him. And I just thought, of course. You know, I mean, here I am assuming that he's going to say no. And he's, I haven't asked him, have I? What an idiot. So I thought, well, I don't know. There was just something so simple about the what she'd said. It was just kind of, well, you don't know whether he'll do it or not because you haven't asked him, have you? So why don't you do that first and then panic? And he was the first person on my mind all along, Paul Darrow, but it was one of those, yeah, but he'll never do it. And then I realized that I knew Paul Jones, who's a voiceover artist, and he also works for Jack FM, which is an Oxfordshire radio station, and Paul Darrow happens to be the voice of Jack FM. So, yeah, I contacted Paul Jones, and yeah,
right.
I got in touch with Paul Darrow and told him the concept. He was absolutely over the moon with it. He thought it was a great idea and wanted to be involved immediately. No coach encouraging with him. I think at the beginning, he did have a problem, didn't he? What was the problem at the beginning, Tim? I seem to remember... I think it was dates.
We had all that problem, didn't we?
We did have to wait 2 months to film with him, didn't we? I think that was mainly it. We had to wait.
And there was a location issue, wasn't there, where to film it? Because we were looking for somewhere that had the character, thinking that we'd have to go down there to meet him, sort of thing, to film it down there. And I know you had a few run-ins with estate agents, didn't you?
Many run-ins with estate agents. I detest the creatures. never speak to another in my life. And if there's any estate agents listening to this, fuck off.
How to alienate your audience.
Unless you're gamers, in which case, fuck
stay
off.
Stay around.
And stay. And by contradiction, because it's really good and I don't really hate you.
But we had a lot of problems with that, didn't we? And I think the other thing we had a problem with initially was Paul was put off by the size of the script when he got it.
We all were.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I kind of had to just say that exactly. You know, I think everyone was a little bit concerned when they saw that.
Well, just to explain and to expand upon that, just so that people know, you know, from an acting point of view, that script is a nightmare because what you've got is you've got Jenks, your character, your main character, your cipher, if you like, who basically his every line is holding up a piece of evidence and saying, "Have you seen this before?" Or, "What can you tell me about Atlas?" So. Basically, most of his lines are, "Have you seen this before?" So you've got no anchorage. So you can't learn the lines because every question is, "Have you seen this before?" You don't know what your next line is. It could be anything. So the lines won't stick. You can't learn them in the usual way because you've got no cues. So I think he looked at that and just thought, "I'll never be able to learn this in 2 weeks." And he was right. But having said that.
Yeah, we did it with Paul like we did it with everyone, didn't we? Which was just
Stephen Mosley and Melanie Gray were the best on their lines. But the rest of us, you know, obviously there was a lot of dialogue to go through with no anchorage for us at all to know where we were up to in the piece. So it was difficult. It was difficult.
There was also the thing that, you know, like you say, there, when you're acting it through, I think we all kind of, you get into that sort of frame of mind where you're reading through something linearly and you kind of imagine that that's, you know, it is a linear script. And of course, it's not really, you know, the way it ends up in the game is that you could be asked, you know, you could, a piece of what you read might end up right at the start of the game and some of it, you know, something else might end up later on. So there's no linearity to the way it actually plays out. But, nice. You know, obviously... Yeah, I mean, we didn't know. I had no idea how actors were going to approach this and how, you know, what was going to be the easiest way to do this. And it's all been a bit of a learning curve, isn't it? You know,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of it, I always say to people, this whole project, from my point of view anyway, happened accidentally because when Tim called me, it wasn't a real offer as such. He basically said, I mean, I've known Tim for a while anyway. We worked together on other projects, but he simply said to me, "I've had this idea in my head for a while, blah, 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 blah." I did a bit of mumbling and then just sort of said, "Do you fancy it?" And I just said, "Yeah, all right." It was a bit like that Python sketch, you know, where Palin says, "You know, do you want to come back to my place?" And Cleese says, "Yeah, all right. It was one of those. It was just, and then we shot the trailer, and which was quite successful. The trailer itself was quite successful. People wanted to know what it was all about, and then I don't know, it just snowballed, didn't it? And it,
it's a bit frightening. It was all a bit frightening from my point of view, though, because I mean, obviously, it just goes from an idea in your head. I mean, I suppose a lot of people say
But what I'm trying to get across is that, you know, you being the producer and in charge, so to speak, there was no preparation. Well, there's some preparation, obviously, but what I'm saying is it literally just fell into place and it was a case of, I'll see if I can get an actor for that part and that part, and I'd go away and I'd get that actor, and then suddenly we'd be filming in a couple of days and me and Tim looking at each other, oh, God, this is happening, isn't it? We're actually doing it now.
It all came together. I mean, you said, I think it was partly because of Rupert coming up from London and only obviously being able to do that once, you know, it kind of forced us into doing the whole thing and filming the whole thing in one big block, didn't it? With the exclusion of Paul Dara that we filmed
a few months later
or something. So that was kind of, I remember that week I got quite stressed because I hadn't even started building props at that point, I think. So I spent
That's what I mean. It literally fell into place basically because I got all the actors quicker than I thought I would do. And suddenly, and everyone was available at that time. So it was a case of, right, we better just do it. I don't know how they all felt about that. I know one of them was a bit kind of, you know, the preparation here is not so great, but I think that person forgave us. You know, they're used to better things. Big star, you see, big star.
She was very understanding in the end, I think.
I said they. Now you've boiled it down, you see. You've said she. You've, oh, God. Anna it Rose can only be one of two people, one of three people now. Oh, dear. Tim. But, yeah, I just wanted to get that across that it was very, you know, very off the cuff, the whole thing from my point of view. It was very kind of, oh, all right, then let's do that tomorrow.
Let's do it,
or next week. It was scary. It was scary. But things fell into place beautifully, and things that wouldn't normally go right for, you know, for the best of us went right for us.
Although, do you mind me saying that I don't think, I know I wasn't in the best of health at the start of this, and you weren't joining it.
Oh, I collapsed in the middle of it. Yeah, I was taken to hospital and ended up having an operation on my birthday. Yeah. That's not contradiction. That wasn't contradiction.
It's the result of contradiction. It's not contradiction.
I think, actually, thinking about it, may well have been the result of contradiction.
Yeah, I think.
Because it was a very odd illness, wasn't it? It came out of nowhere as well, a bit like contradiction, funnily.
Yes. Yeah. But.
Yeah.
Okay. When I watched the trailer, I don't want you to take this the wrong way because what I'm going
to
say
I'm looking forward to this
is shit. Basically,
I think it's bloody shit. Don't take it the wrong way, but it's fucking.
Go on.
I was going to get my mum to transcribe this, but I'm not going to bother now. bad language.
So where is it?
You knew I'd swear.
It felt a little Midsummer Murders-ish in the setting. Oh,
no. Yeah.
Hey, I like Midsummer Murders.
The reason I say, oh, no, is because I know what Tim's going to say now. Go on.
Why do you think... See, I have no problems with Midsummer Murders, but I heard a lot of people kind of say, you know, a friend of mine, for instance, said, you don't want to go down the Midsummer Murders route because that's kind of just been done to death. It's cliched, you know what I mean, all the rest of it. And my thinking on it was, well, actually, I do want to go down the Midsummer route because it's cliched and people know what that is. And it needs some sort of hook that people can latch onto.
Well, in fact, we went so far down the Midsummer Murders route that John Nettles was approached to do the final scene. We approached him last week, didn't we, Tim?
And really?
He turned us down.
I love John Nettles.
Well, his agent turned us down.
You never know. His agent might not have asked him. You know, when they find out we were only offering a copy of Heat magazine as payment, signed, by Jade Goody. So it's an old one.
The thing is, I know what you're saying. The reason I can explain that further, though, why it's the Midsummer Murders sort of thing. It basically we needed one self-contained place to film this because you're filming. It does geographically kind of more or less match up with a real place sort of thing. And it had to because, and especially when I started filming it, I realized initially I thought, you know, I'd be able to blag it and you wouldn't be able to tell that it didn't link sort of thing. And then having filmed it, you realize that actually you can tell that, you know, things aren't in the place that they're meant to be. You can kind of see it because, you know, if you're taking a wide shot of a village street sort of thing, you can kind of see everything in the street, you know, so you need to have things more or less in situ. So it was, I'd kind of thought about where I could film this, where would be a self-contained area, village that I could shoot it in. I did toy with the idea, I think, early on of filming the whole thing in a glamping site with people in glamping pods outside a huge stately home, which I found. And it just seemed all a bit silly, really. I think when we sort of thought about it a bit more, I kind of thought, it didn't really make any sense. So I ended up with the village, which is called Great Budworth in Cheshire. And it's a very, very nice, timeless sort of village. And they were actually, the last when we filmed Paul, they were filming a BBC drama there, weren't they?
They were.
At the same time.
We all tried to get involved in that, but... because we believe that we can just walk into productions and just be in them.
Yeah.
So we tried to get in them.
I tried, didn't work.
Right. A couple more questions. Just going back to getting Paul Darrow involved, John. Mm-hmm. Was there any point when you were doubting whether he'd say yes or not that you thought you could dress up as him and just pretend to be him?
not at all. No. No. Oh, no. One thing that, yeah, I would draw the line at dressing up. Well, people often say to me, you should stick a Tom Baker wig on and get a scarf and get out there. And I said, no fucking chance. Absolutely. That would be, I mean, I can't think of anything that would be the kiss of death more than that, you know, for anybody's career. But anyway, no, he did come back to us after 2 weeks and said that he was no longer interested because the time scale wasn't right. So we did lose him at one stage, but and I panicked and phoned him and had a very long conversation with him. Talked about anything but work or contradiction, and just ended up kind of really gelling. And then, you know, I managed to convince him somehow after about 40 minutes of just having a laugh. Mm. Managed to convince him to get back on board. So did lose him.
Was that after I sent an email saying, thanks, Paul, no problems. If you're not interested, that's absolutely fine. Sort of said, what?
Yeah, Tim tends to do things like that. In other words, give up immediately.
He wasn't much giving up. He was more being polite. That's all.
He just said, yeah, fine, bye. You know, fucking hell. Lost him.
You know. We both got the impression, though, that he just didn't want to be bothered with it, didn't we, at one point? And we kind of thought...
Yeah.
So, anyway, you did you were successful. Anyway, I was successful. Getting it back.
Yeah, I mean, he's over the moon about the project. He's seen quite a lot of it, and we've shown him little bits, nods and ends. He was very impressed. I think one of the things that inspired him to get involved was our trailer that we'd put together.
Yeah,
because we'd already put together a small trailer, even though we were only 2 weeks into production. But we needed to put something out there to show to potential investors that this is the kind of level we're looking at. And that was the thing that impressed him, in particular Rupert Booth. And he asked me, who's the guy playing the inspector? He's very good, isn't he? And this is an interesting point. I don't know if you... Oh, you've seen the trailer, haven't you, Christian?
Yes, I have, yeah.
I think when you get to your lead character, Rupert Booth, I think, would you expect him to appear that way? In other words, he's not your general Midsummer Murders type inspector. He's not your average inspector. That was very deliberate to make that character a little bit more eccentric and a little bit more standout-ish, you know, than your average inspector, because, you know, otherwise it would have been a very, very long, drawn-out and boring 2 hours, 45 minutes, I think, you know, with monotonous questioning. So we had to spice that character up a little bit. So, and you know, very pleased. And Paul Darrow was particularly pleased with his performance, but I am. I think he did a wonderful job.
Yeah, he also did it. I think the thing is with Rupert, it's not always immediately obvious. It wouldn't be obvious to someone watching this, but he was so on the ball with as regards understanding exactly the emphasis he had to give to a particular thing. And if he was unsure, he'd give me two emphases, you know, which have been turned out to be absolutely vital in the edit as well, you know.
Yeah.
You know, brilliant. Basically, I was very fortunate. Really, I think we were fortunate to get Rupert.
Think so as well, and I think that because he is the game player, he is you. He is the he's the man at the keyboard. I think that it's a character for the player to step into, and I think he did a great job. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. I mean, I'm looking forward to playing it, and I there's a question along those lines I'm going to come on to in a minute. But Tim, you mentioned something about building props earlier.
Yeah.
And were you filming it as well?
I had some help, didn't I? I mean, Ian Cash was a friend of mine who's got he actually had the camera kit as well, which was a big boom because it obviously meant I didn't have to hire extra equipment. But also he's a the camera operator. So he was ideal. I had another friend called Simon Lucas who helped out when Ian wasn't available as well. Simon was quite keen just to be involved. I think early on he said he'd like to be involved. And so he was involved, and they were both pretty much invaluable, weren't they? We did shoot one day without either of them because I think both were busy that one particular day. We only just scraped through, didn't we? I mean, I remember starting the scene. We didn't even have the mic set up. Do you remember that?
I remember that. Yeah.
We started filming, yeah, and we thought, hang on a minute, there's no sound. We thought we'd better get the sound kit.
Yeah.
So, and it was one of those things. It was just so rushed. I mean, honestly, we were filming we're filming from 8 a.m, 7 a.m. till 10 p.m. every day, weren't we? It was just absolutely.
Yeah. We were all multitasking as well. I mean, the other thing is this is kind of what we've achieved or what we've nearly achieved because it's not quite finished yet. Mm. Is something that looks like it's had 100k spent on it, and it's had 3 or 4 grand, well, 5 grand, you said.
Altogether, yeah. I mean,
it does look like a more expensive, and it also, you wouldn't, I hope not anyway, but you wouldn't assume that these people who had made it had no fucking idea what they were doing. And that was the case. We still don't. We don't know what the hell we're doing. And we can't wait for it to come out either. So, because. Let's see if it works.
But I remember Rupert saying that we were near the end of the shoot, and I kept getting Rupert to do things like open doors and walk, and and I had techniques to avoid kind of the obviously if you're seeing the same clips over and over again, it's going to get repetitious. So I had a few theories, theories on how to make this work so that you wouldn't get bored of that, and it wouldn't really matter. Which was, mainly avoiding any expressions of, for linking scenes and things like this. And it's kind of technical side. But I remember Rupert right at the end said, I'm starting to piece this together now. I can see how this works. It was sort of near the end of the shoot, not to say that I'm not making any fault in Rupert, Rupert in there. But the fact was that there was just far too much to explain, and we had far too little time to do it.
I was constantly asking you, so what have I just done? We're filming this. What have I just done in the last scene? And you said, oh no, the last scene you filmed wasn't the last. That it won't be like that. It won't be the last scene in the actual piece. In other words, I didn't know where I was from one from one take to the next. I didn't know chronologically where that was placed. So.
No, but the thing is, I mean, that's part of the thing with the game, though. I mean, the way that it's structured is there is a linearity to it, but I've tried to make as much of it as non-linear as possible. Because that was specifically what I was trying to avoid with this, was that linear branching sort of game system. I think in the original Kickstarter pitch, I made a big deal of that, but again, without really understanding how. Without playing it, I think it's difficult to grasp, that to understand the difference between a linear plot and a linear video. If you see what I mean, there's a linearity to the plot and the progression through chapters and things. But within each chapter, you're free to do anything in any order you want to.
Okay. How's it going with developing it or transferring it into an app then, into a game? Has that already started?
Now that's proving to be more of a problem than I thought it would be, to be honest with you. I've got a few programmers who are going to help because basically I did a little bit of programming when I was 17 and nothing until last year when I had to go again.
Right. You didn't tell me that when you approached me.
Purely to do this game, I actually sat and thought, well, I'm not going to be able to afford to pay anyone to do this. So if I want to make this thing, I'm going to have to learn to program myself. And, I'm coming at it from the point of view of I did write some Spectrum, ZX Spectrum music and little code routines when I was, I want to say 17, I'm probably younger than that, actually, probably 14, 15 or something. And since then, I haven't looked at any software, never looked at programming again, sort of thing. And so I looked around and I found out that people are developing things in HTML5 now, which is the new web standard, but it's basically very flexible. It's got to the point where, JavaScript, which is the programming language, is very, very good now, so you can write the game, and I have the game running as it is on a desktop, runs in Chrome browser, and it's absolutely fine. Everything's up to speed. There's no delays. It looks great. The only problem is when you come to run it on the iPad, it kind of works, as in everything seems to be working, but obviously the power just isn't there in the iPad to maintain it. And so the problems I've got at the moment are, you know, there are things going wrong with it, which I can't really release it as an app in that form.
Right.
Even though there are ways of converting it into an app, you know, which is what I was kind of relying on.
Yeah.
So I've got a few options to go through at the moment. I need to explore all those avenues. And if it can't be done by keeping it in HTML5, I'm going to have to rewrite it or get a programmer to rewrite it basically for the iPad specifically, which is a complete pain because I didn't really expect to have to do that. But that's unfortunately the reality I'm kind of hitting at the moment with the iPad. It's just not quite powerful enough to do the game, which is funny because, I mean, it can run graphic, you know, games absolutely no problem, but it's because it's got a built-in graphics processor, you know. If you come to write something which is all video, it's processing that video all the time. And it has got a video processor in it as well to play that back. But obviously there are problems with it because it's, as I say, it is jerky. It's missing the video. You know, it's not playing back properly. It's not, it sometimes miss the end of the video and you start to see the next clip before it realizes where it's up to and things like that. You know, it's not, right. It's not releasable in that way. But yeah. No, I'm going to have to get a programmer involved, I think, because it's just beyond me. Because honestly, I learned JavaScript from a website that just sort of said this instruction does this, and I kind of just got it, cobbled it together, and I know virtually nothing. Basically, I know as much as I need to know to write the thing in the most basic way, sort of thing. But there's, I need to get a program involved because I'm rubbish.
So, what do you expect it to be for release then, date wise, time wise?
Well, I don't know, because it's not actually far off in a way. Funnily enough, it's not far off being completed. I mean, we've got some, so we would like to film some extra, an extra little scene for the end.
Although I keep trying to point out to Tim that on the original trailer you said, summer.
I know, yeah.
Well, we said summer, but here we are in summer, so we haven't...
And this is one of my kind friends on Facebook put late summer.
That was me!
Was it?
I keep telling everyone it's late summer now, you know.
Oh, right.
Because it's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, no, we always meant late summer. Yeah, we always meant late summer. Of course we did.
This is the thing. It's in a way, it's annoying because it's not far off, but it's if we do want to film some extra bits, that's going to actually...
Well, you're going on holiday.
I'm going on holiday tomorrow, yeah, so I'm away. Well done.
The thing about getting an app developer is, in my experience, but from what I know as a technology writer...
Yeah,
which always sounds a lot more impressive than it actually is. Is that an app? I mean, depending on, I mean, you've done a lot of work on it already, and you've organised it, and know where everything is and where everything's going. It could be something that takes someone like 5 or 6 hours to do, and then that's and it's ready the next day.
Absolutely, and the fact is that all the code is there in a way in one form. So I mean, a lot of what the code is just a big, array, a data array basically. That just lists all the locations, what the options are, and the actual code is, it's easy. What I've been doing as I've been writing it is, I've had this in mind that I might be passing this on to someone at some point, so I've been kind of putting comments all the way through it and trying to keep it neat so that people can, you know, can look at it. And like you say, it might honestly take a good programmer, you know, a day to put this together, and that might be it, you know. It's not beyond possibility, you know. So
okay. So you're looking at iPad. Would there be, and you mentioned smaller resolution, so presumably iPhone as well. Would there be?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Right.
We'll see how we get with that. Possibly. The only problem with the iPhone is I'm going to have to drastically change the interface because a lot of this is reading text on screen.
Right.
And I'm not sure. It's just not really going to work on the phone, I don't think.
Okay. Possibly. What about Android then?
Maybe Android. The other problem with Android is the technology isn't there. I mean, it's struggling on the iPad, which is kind of the best of the tablets, really, I think. So I'm going to have to... I mean, the original plan was that it would run on Android, but certainly the demo I've got at the moment on my wife's Huddle is absolutely hopeless. It doesn't come anywhere near being able to play it, basically. Right. But that's because of the video, and there are hardware.
That's a low-end device as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem. The problem is that the video is very intensive still to process. The iPad's got a built-in chip that does it, But most of these devices, no. I'm not sure about the Samsungs. You know, I think they may have a chip in that can do it. I can't remember. I've not looked into it properly. Some of them will let you play the video, but you can't put overlays on top of it, which obviously then defeats the object straight away again.
Sure.
So it really does depend on the technology, whether it's there to be able to play. But there will definitely be a desktop version of it.
Oh, good. Right.
So that's definitely going to happen for, you know, PC, Mac sort of thing. That is within the realms of possibility, and even in what I know sort of thing, there is a way of doing it. So hopefully that will happen, definitely. The mobile devices...
Hopefully, definitely.
Yeah. Mobile devices, yeah. You know, we'll see how we go with that. I don't know about the power of the Samsungs, but it's probably going to have to be limited to the larger tablets.
Right.
And not the Huddle. It's rubbish. But, I mean, it's good, you know, for browsing, but not for playing back video. So.
Okay.
There'll be a board game available.
A board game? The future board game. Do you know what? It would work as a board game.
It would work as a board game, you see. Yeah.
It would.
With your DVD or Blu-ray to insert into your player.
This idea, I mean, of mine was originally specifically for, and this is where the iPad comes into it. It was specifically for people who aren't really great big gamers. I mean, you know, big standard gamers. It was for the casual gamer. And that's why the iPad appealed to me originally, because that's exactly that market that the iPad opened up, really, was the casual gamer. You know, the kind of someone will sit down and, you know, have a go at something for a while. It's just, it's kind of entertainment they want, really. They don't want a big challenge. They just want to kind of, you know, sit there and get into a world, you know, something for a while and pass the time. That's where I'm coming from. And the board game thing definitely connects with it, because the basic principle of it is very board game-like, I think, really, which is, you could imagine playing this on cards out of a box, you know, because it you could basically have statements that people say, and it really is just about listening to what they've said and working out whether anything they've said contradicts something else they've said somewhere else, you know.
Mm.
So that would work as a basic card game. It'd be bloody hard to write that, because it would have to be a lot bigger probably than the app. It's possible, yeah. So we'll think about that, John.
Well, those card games are coming back into vogue as well.
Yeah.
With tabletop gamers. So I used to have a marvellous one called Chainsaw Warrior from Games Workshop about 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
20 years ago, maybe further.
Yeah.
It's an excellent game. And then I sold it to raise funds for, I think it paid for someone's meal at my wedding. wish I could buy it back now. Have you got anything else that you think I should know?
Maybe we should tell them who the cast members are properly, because we could. Well, I kind of forgot them all and then couldn't pronounce their names.
Yes, let's do that. And while I'm just waffling, I'm just going to call up the website where I've got all the names in front of me.
Yeah, you read them out. You read them out. That's right, Sutter, you help me.
Tell us who's in it.
Who's in it? Paul Darrow is in it. Yes.
Who's he? Tim?
Former Blake 7 star. Well, actually, not technically the star, but definitely the star.
What do you mean, not technically? He is the star.
What's the star?
He carried the whole show himself.
Yeah. And Doctor Who Extra.
Extra?
Walk on.
Oh, he's going to... Yeah, he's going to love you when he hears this.
Isn't he? Yeah, he is.
At this speed, it's going to take us about...
It is. Right, okay. Rupert Booth. Rupert Booth, who is a writer, essentially, isn't he? I mean, I've got it here in front of me. I always forget this. No, I don't forget he's a writer. I forget what he's written for, though. He's written for Shooting Stars, hasn't he? And quite a few things.
It's Patrick McGowan's biographer.
And obviously, I suppose you don't know that, do you? Patrick McGowan's autobiographer. Not autobiographer.
Shall I do this?
Yes, Melanie Gray, stage screen actress with a huge list of theatre and TV film roles. I'm just reading there.
And current face of Allbran. I don't mean her face is covered in, mind you. Maybe somebody super glued lots of tiny Allbrans to her and that. No.
John Guyler, who we pass on. I think we don't need to talk about John. Rosa Butler, half Irish and half Spanish. She says, and she does lots of things. She seems to be one of those people who's permanently busy, doesn't she?
Absolutely.
Organising theatre things and doing all kinds of stuff. Magnus Sinding, he was a Norwegian actor, even though you can't tell. Well, yeah, this is one of the
things that means.
Well, the thing is, he speaks with absolute. There's no hint of any kind of accent at all. He just speaks with a fluent British accent. But you know, he kind of one of the people that claim to be Norwegian. So I'm not sure.
His appearance gives that away, though. I think
he does, but that's about it. I mean, you know, nothing else gives it away.
No.
I mean, he's quite intelligent, so I suppose that gives it away.
I like the quiet at the beginning there. Quiet. Yeah.
He's wearing a hat with horns, is how he gives it away.
He was the only one that understood the.
Yes, yes.
Do you know what? He was the only one of the cast so far that's understood the Ryan Rand reference in the Rand.
Yeah, yes, he did, yeah.
Stephen Moseley, who's an author, an actor, and many things. What it says here, one half of the music duo Collinson Twin.
That's right.
Collinson Twin being the Twins of Evil, isn't it? Actresses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's in a band and he writes books and he's an actor and a very good one.
Yes, he is very good. And he turned up and knew everything and we flew through his scenes incredibly quickly, didn't
we? Put us all to shame, didn't he? Yeah. And he almost played it too well. He plays a drug addict, but I think, didn't you show some of his scenes to somebody and they were like, oh, he's not putting much into this. He's like, he's playing a druggie.
Yeah, it was Ian that said that. And he didn't say that. He said, oh, he seems like a drug addict. And I said, well, funnily enough, Ian.
That's exactly what it is.
And
then Ellie Chivers.
Ellie Chivers, who is, she's actually a violinist, isn't she, Ellie? She was explaining this and I wasn't familiar with this sort of concept, but apparently there are a lot of parts for actress violinists, and she gets
there are.
Work. She does a lot of that. I presume there's a lot of it's theatre, isn't it? And she does a lot of stuff. Kind of, I always think she's so good.
It's a big requirement in theatre. I mean, I had to learn to play the mandolin and certain things for certain shows that I did, because you're touring for 18 months, you have to actually play the instruments. So she gets a lot of work. And then finally...
Well, we've got Chris Jackson as the final one on this list. Chris Jackson was originally going to play Jenks, and he got a full-time job just before, his time was basically taken up just before we started shooting and working full-time, so he couldn't... we had to get Rupert at the last minute, really, didn't we? But Chris makes an appearance as one of the bit parts now in walk-ons as a drunk. He does drunk all right. He did Stern quite well, didn't he? As the inspector, original Jenk sort of thing. Yeah, but
he did what? Sorry,
he did Stern quite well. You know,
Stern.
Chris is a very large guy, isn't he? When I say large, I mean he's tall, very tall. I shouldn't say large. He's a very tall guy and very big. With it, quite imposing. What am I trying to say, John?
I don't know.
He's an imposing man.
He's a big lad.
Which did have its benefits when he was the inspector, because I imagine most people could, if you actually was an inspector, you would, you know, you would listen to what he was asking you, basically. But anyway, Chris is in it. Dan Alfieri is in it. I hope I've said that correctly. Who is another walk-on. We had students from Chester College turn up for one of the scenes, didn't we?
Yeah.
They were good. Is there Sally's Dan's girlfriend? Anyone we've missed?
I don't know. So all people you've never heard of, apart from Paul Darrow, are in it now.
Okay.
No, that's a joke. That's a joke. When you see it, you'll say, "Oh yeah, her from that, and him from that." Oh yeah. You go.
Ellie, I think will be appearing shortly in something, because I can't believe she's gonna. That talent's gonna, you know, stay in theatre.
I don't know about that, because you only have to turn on ITV for 10 minutes. And,
well, this is true, yeah.
If she's good, you know, she's not going to be on your ITV channel, is she?
No.
Sorry, I shouldn't say things like that.
We'll use some selective editing.
Okay.
I'd like to thank you both for taking the time to speak to me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate that.
Yes, thank you very much.
And I'll let you know when various things are available to read or listen to.
Okay.
And all the best with it as well.
Oh, thank you. Thanks very much.
Thanks for showing interest.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. I really want to play it.
I hope it doesn't disappoint and you play it for 5 minutes and think, oh, God, I wish.
Well, put it this way. If it does...
Yeah.
You won't say anything about it.
I know. I mean, if I play it and I've bought it, I'll just let the kids play it. So they'll be into it. No, I'm sure it'll be brilliant. And you know, I want. It's one of those things. You know, like the old Choose Your Own Adventure books. I had like 30 or 40 of them. And I used to read them over and over again to get the different pass through.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I had the Doctor Who ones as well. Embarrassingly, as
terrible, weren't they?
I had Warlock of Firetop Mountain. Do you remember that?
Citadel of Chaos.
Citadel of Chaos. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was the third planet from Alta. I played with my mind. Something horrific.
Forest of Doom. I remember that.
Forest of Doom. Yeah. Was not the weaker of the three.
I don't know. I just remember the first 10 seeming like the best
thing ever when you're that age.
Yeah.
The first 10 books, I mean, being that I think the best of the bunch. Citadel of Chaos was always my favourite.
Oh, yeah. there was one as well that came out a few years later called Journey to the Year 3000, which was a bit thicker.
Yeah.
And it was basically Earth was a totalitarian thing with a mental president trying to kill you.
So it is exactly. It's just. It's just. Have you sure you've been reading the newspapers?
it wasn't Journey to the Year 2014. It was definitely 3000.
Right. Yeah.
I love that whole kind of thing. Yeah.
I think the only thing I would add, I know we've finished now, is that really I see the game being aimed at families. You know, that's the way I see it. That was always the intention. So that's one of the reasons Paul Darrow's in it. It's one of those, oh my goodness, it's him from the good old days of television, you know.
That is the thing. I mean, pitching-wise, I'm not sure what kind of, if this was a film, what certificate it would get, because it does have drug references, doesn't it, and things.
I think PG, seriously, I think these
days. Yeah, but it isn't.
12 at
least. Yeah, there's nothing kind of horrendous in there, is there? And there's no... no violence, no swearing, no.
Just in the interviews.
Yeah, just in the interviews. Yeah. No nudity, unfortunately. But
hey, countdown! I told you I'll do it on the next one.
Yeah, so you'd let me down on that, John.
So yeah, that's how I say it. But I've looked at certain bits of footage since with you, Tim. If you remember last time I came, and it hits the spot that I wanted it to hit. In other words. It's got the perfect mix. It's funny where it needs to be funny, and sometimes unintentionally funny. Something,
but
the unintentional funnies actually look like they were the intentional funnies, and vice versa. But
you're making it sound more amateur than it.
I am, aren't I?
Yeah.
Well, it'll only up sales because people want to buy it to see how bad it is. So there you go.
Paul, honestly, Paul, when I've been editing Paul's piece. And there is, I think it is about 30 minutes purely of Paul in the game, you know, out of that three quarter hours. And Paul is just delivers some lines just absolutely perfectly. Just you crack up, you just listen to the way he delivers them, you know. It's just
absolutely
brilliant. So
yeah, we had a lot of fun. And I covered Ian Cash, the camera operator, in water at one stage.
Yeah.
I'd just taken a drink of water and Paul Darrow was, just cracking jokes all the way through the day, and it just so happened to be the worst joke in the world that made me laugh more than anything, because it always is. It always works out that way.
I know which one it was.
And I had a mouthful of water which I was holding, trying to just swallow it, and it was the old this chicken is rubbery.
Oh no!
Now I know, but I
just shouted action a thing, and he just said
action. Then he did that joke, and all I could hear in my head was Avon saying it, not Paul Darrow, but all I could hear was. Yes, this chicken is rubbery. This chicken is rubbery, 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 rubbery. And it just came rubbery, rubbery in my head. And suddenly I let go of all this water that was in my mouth, and it went just absolutely drenched the entire crew, but particularly Ian. So he wasn't very, very pleased, very cool. But all day, it was like that all day, wasn't it? It was as I think Paul will testify.
And it was his birthday, wasn't it? It was his birthday.
It was his birthday, the worst jokes in the world, but coming from him.
Yeah,
the best jokes in the world.
We all meal, didn't we, afterwards? And was, we can
tell. Yeah. Yes, it's a laugh a minute. So if you do a follow-up, Paul has shown interest in having an interview with you. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Can do that.
I look forward to that. And we'll do a post-release follow-up. That would be...
Yeah,
that's great.
Possible. Excellent. Okay, then. Great. Well, as I say, good to speak to you both.
Yeah. And you,
Steve. And take care.
Thank you for your interest.